This is number 0026, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this indeed is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0026. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, well, it's all about the soaps. Peggy McKay, one of the grand dames of daytime, is along on the show. She plays Caroline Brady on Days of Our Lives. Is there an advantage to playing the same character for almost 30 years?
The advantage to it is that you have a relationship with the other actors, a long-time relationship. So you can build a relationship, like between my son and myself. There's a certain way we talk to each other. My character relates to their character in a certain way. And after a certain period of time, my character's gotten to be a stronger character than it was. I liked her in the beginning. She was a rather shady lady. She had an affair and never told anybody. She had a son. That gave her, you know, something else going on. But they haven't gone back there to anything like that.
Linda Marshall-Smith is from Soapdom.com. Just what is Soapdom.com?
The web destination, portal, and social network that's dedicated to the world of soap operas, a.k.a. Soapdom. We've been online in one form or another since 1999, and we are right there in the middle of all the soap opera hustle and bustle. So we cover the daytime Emmys or on the red carpet. We cover the special events with the shows themselves. And we work directly with the production companies, the networks, the talent, the publicists to, you know, deliver to fans the latest inside information on what's going on inside the world of soap opera.
Plus, we have Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation, and, of course, an idiot of the day. And lots and lots and lots of stuff. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0026, is Kelly McCullen, who is a reporter, producer, and host for UNC-TV. That's North Carolina's only statewide public television network. And you can say hi to Kelly and watch his own Southern-style stuff at kellymccullen.com. You can also visit unctv.org. Thank you very much, Kelly, for doing this week's edition of the Stuff File Slate. And let's get right to the stuff, because as I said, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. We start off with a story from Germany. A thief in the German town of Hameln robbed an amusement arcade by threatening the attendant with a cup of coffee. He wasn't going to pour coffee over her, he was going to hit her with the cup. Brandishing the steaming cup he had just ordered, the thief forced the 26-year-old to open the till and fled with cash. Police would not say how much money he had taken from the attendant, who, by the way, was alone in the arcade at the time. This is a quote from the police: "We don't want to encourage others to try this." Meanwhile, we go to New York. A Brooklyn woman said a mugger stole a doggy coat right off the back of her mild-mannered terrier. Donna McPherson said she tied up Lexi, her 10-year-old Westie, outside a Park Slope supermarket for 2 minutes while she bought milk. She heard a funny bark. When McPherson went outside, she found the little white dog shivering. His green wool coat, with leather trim and belt, was nowhere in sight. McPherson said the dog's coat was worth about $25. She also said that, fortunately, Lexi wasn't wearing his pricier Burberry coat. I'll just leave that alone and move along. Okay, and the Plexico Burris Award goes to... A man accidentally shot himself in the leg shortly after leaving a Jupiter gun store. Police said the unidentified man went to Chuck's Guns and Ammo. That's right, Chuck's Guns and Ammo, looking for batteries for the laser sight on a small handgun. When the man was back in his car, the gun accidentally fired, hitting him in the leg. The man was taken to a West Palm Beach hospital for treatment. And believe it or not, that man doesn't make the idiot of the day, because the one I've got later is a doozy. Moving right along to Flint, Michigan. Authorities said a man accused of stealing a car, then reporting it stolen, remains in custody after telling police he was robbed at gunpoint while trying to buy crack cocaine with a credit card. The Flint Journal said the man reported Thursday night that a 2003 Chevy Malibu had been stolen. Police reports indicate the vehicle was previously stolen out of Lapeer, about 50 miles north-northwest of Detroit. The suspect is being lodged at the Genesee County Jail. And believe it or not, he's also not the idiot of the day. Meanwhile, in Wyoming, police say a man suspected of stealing a bottle of schnapps from a Wyoming grocery store didn't have the best escape route planned. Riverton police said the 26-year-old man ran out of the store after grabbing the bottle of booze and a package of cough drops and hid in a nearby building, which happened to be the police station. Police say the man then ran out of the police station, but not before a dispatcher had spied him on the station's surveillance camera and alerted officers. The man, who police said was drunk, was caught soon after. He was taken into custody on preliminary charges of resisting arrest and shoplifting. Elsewhere in January, U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers confiscated a live, jeweled beetle that a woman was wearing as an accessory on her sweater as she crossed into Brownsville, Texas from Mexico. Blue jewels were glued onto the beetle's back, which had been painted gold, and the mobile brooch was tethered by a gold chain attached to a safety pin. Even though the woman orally declared the animal, the beetle was confiscated because she had not completed the Bureau's PPQ Form 526. Jot that down, folks, in case you ever need one yourself. That's the PPQ Form 526, which is necessary to bring insects into the country. Reportedly, such jewelry is not that rare in Mexico. A spokesperson for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals was, of course, appalled. Meanwhile, let's talk about the high cost of sexual self-gratification, shall we? Jeweler Colin Byrne of Brome, Australia, announced in October at the Asia Adult Expo in Macau that he will make the world's most expensive personal vibrator in 10 limited editions out of smooth platinum, each with 1,500 white diamonds. He said he planned to shoot for a price of $1 million and noted that he currently offers a similar sex toy with only 450 diamonds, but with a handle made out of rare conkerberry wood. That one sells for $38,000. Talk about buying something for the person who has everything, except maybe a partner. To Manhattan Beach, California, Manhattan Beach police have arrested a man they claim tried to buy urine from boys at an elementary school. Sergeant Brian Brown said an 18-year-old man was arrested for investigation of annoying children. He remained in jail on $150,000 bail. Authorities believe the man walked into a restroom at Pacific Elementary School last week and offered two boys several dollars to urinate into a cup. School officials say they refused. Brown said investigators suspect the man was trying to collect urine to pass drug tests. Oh, let's hope that's the reason, because every other reason is just too creepy to think about. Brown said the man's image was captured by a video surveillance camera, and he was arrested when he returned to the school. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File on the Stuff File program, economic recovery in Denver? Well, let's take a look. As of early January, at least 390 new Denver businesses had applied for sales tax licenses as dispensaries for legal medicinal marijuana. Now, by comparison, Starbucks coffee shops, which as you know are everywhere, only number 208 in the entire state of Colorado. So there you go. Among the first cannabis-centered businesses to open in December was the Ganja Gourmet on South Broadway, featuring lasagna, pizza, jambalaya, paella-flavored cheesecakes, and other delicacies, all spiced appropriately for customers with doctor's prescriptions. There you go. The economy marches on. On to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and as I mentioned, it's all about the soaps. On the line with us right now is the Emmy-winning actress Peggy McKay, who was best known since 1983 as Caroline Brady on Days of Our Lives. She is guesting on the CBS series Cold Case in an episode that airs on Sunday, February 21st. So she's a star of daytime and of nighttime, but she's taking the time to be on with us right now. Hi, Peggy. How are you?
I'm fine. In fact, I'm the only Academy member that they know of that has a daytime and nighttime nomination in the same year. It's just
That's
weird.
That's true, yeah.
I work both places.
And the one they actually gave you was the nighttime one, was it not?
Yes, the one I won was nighttime.
Well, so you managed to do both daytime and nighttime. So right off the bat, I'll ask about the differences. And the reason why I bring that up is I've always believed that daytime actors are some of the hardest working, unsung actors that are out there, because day in, day out, pages and pages of dialogue with no repeats. So you tell me what the difference is.
Well, it is the hardest. We do 80 pages of dialogue a day, and we have to finish it in that day. Now, I went to do Cold Case, and I had the whole show had 7 to 8 days or more to finish an hour. So you can see right then and there the difference, that everybody on a daytime show has to deliver in the same day, and that includes the actors, the directors, the wardrobe. I mean, everybody has to work at full speed in order to finish the 80 pages in a day. We don't carry them over to another day. You know, we got to do it and finish it, or we sometimes do 3 or 4 shows at the same time, pieces of each, in order to get the work done. And it is, I've done theater and film and nighttime, and it's the hardest work in the business. You really have to be willing to work very hard and be ready to go to work immediately on a daytime show. You know, there's no, let's take that again and we'll try that again. There's no time for that. No.
I want to talk a little bit about the about your work in daytime, but I have to bring up the Cold Case thing. I want to talk a little bit about that. You play the role of Zelda, Queen of the Knives.
Yes, that's right. I was delighted. It was such a change of pace for me. I loved it. And I'm surprised. I mean, I just went in there and I had a concept of her as a rather ballsy woman who certainly, if you are a circus performer and have survived, you have to be strong. I mean, there's no question that's one of the toughest lives in the world. They're touring, they tear the tent down, put it up, and go from one town to another. It's very competitive, and they all have to be extremely good at what they do. As this woman says, unfortunately, I lost my temper, so they usually throw knives, I did research, at their family or their husbands and wives, because they don't want to, if anything goes wrong. It's better that way. So she says I've lost 3 out of my 4 divorces is due to my losing my temper while throwing a knife at my husband. So it's very colorful, and I love doing it. It's a wonderful character.
Now, as you said, it's a change of pace for you to a certain degree, and I'm just wondering, you know, you played the role, as I said, of Carolyn Brady on Days of Our Lives since 83. What's it like playing a long-running...
Carolyn Brady. Character.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's it like playing a long-running character on a show for so many years? Does it become almost second nature?
Well, in a way, the advantage to it is that you have a relationship with the other actors, a long-time relationship. So you can build a relationship, like between my son and myself. There's a certain way we talk to each other. And, you know, my character relates to their character in a certain way. And after a certain period of time, my character's gotten to be a stronger character than it was. And I liked her in the beginning. She was rather a shady lady. She had an affair and never told anybody. She had a son, and that gave her, you know, something else going on. But they haven't gone back there to anything like that. Hmm. But she's very much involved in her family. And actually, she's pretty much the mainstay of that family. You know, the father's not around anymore, so...
After all these years in the role, how much of Peggy is in Caroline? How much of Caroline is in Peggy?
I think in the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, more of Peggy is in Caroline than in the beginning. Definitely. Now, I've made her much stronger and outspoken. And I think the writers like that because that's the way they write it.
Are there things, having played the character for so long, are there things that you bring to the character that when the writers say, we're planning to do this, this, and this, you can say, well, I don't think Caroline would do that?
Well, one of the things that the actors can bring is the continuity. Because in soaps, there's so much writing to be done. They change writers. I think they simply have to because they get written out, you know? Conan. I don't know how they do what they do. It's very difficult. So the actors are the ones that will remember exactly what happened because they played the scene. And sometimes that can get lost in what they call the Bible, the backstory of the soap opera. I mean, all new writers have to read it, but there's an awful lot of material. So quite often an actor will know better what happened before than the recent writer. And at that point, it's helpful to point out that that didn't go that way, it went this way. And then that's it.
Your career goes back to the days of live television.
I know.
What was that like when everything was live?
I don't think that people could do it today. I mean, it was so crazy. I mean, it was live, and you would, you know, an hour was an hour, and any mistake, there wasn't any film or anything to correct it. It just went out over the air. And, you know, corpses were seen to get up because they thought they were camera was off them, and all kinds of, the audience loved those mistakes, you know. And actually, it was like a marathon, because you would have a scene and finish it, and then your next immediate scene would probably be at the very far end of the studio in another outfit. So while you're running to the next set, a dresser is taking clothes off and throwing it on, and you're running along side by side. And when you get to the entrance, you have to take a deep breath and not show that you've been running because you had been. And that's the way it went. I mean, it was very fast, and funny things happened. I had a funny thing happen with, it luckily didn't go on the air, with Roddy McDowell, who said to me, we're doing the heiress, you know, the suitor who jilts this wealthy woman, and she, at the end, she has a revenge. And the lines were, she wrote him a false check, and the lines were, he steps back, kisses her, and says, you look just like your father, who is a miserly, miserable man. And what happened in the dress rehearsal, Roddy decided to wear a mustache to make him look older, and a passage of time, and on the dress, when he stepped back, I saw that half of his mustache was gone. And he tried, and he kissed me, and he tried to deliver the line, you look like your father, but he couldn't, because the other half of the mustache was on me. And if that would have been a classic. That was a dress rehearsal. If that had gone over the air, I mean, it would have been one of the great bloopers of all times. We just saved by the bell that time. It's so funny.
Flashing.
The crew was gone. I mean, everybody fell on the floor. It was just, there were all kinds of mistakes made. And it was very challenging. The thing is, you rehearsed, though, for 2 weeks. Mm. So that it was like a theater performance. It started and it never stopped, you know. There are famous stories of some actor like Lon Chaney Jr., who for dress rehearsal was told, don't break the chair, just say chair, break, and go on. And so he was new to television, and when it came to the actual show, he didn't know it was the show. So he went into the scene and went, chair, break. He never broke the chairs. And that went out over the air.
Now,
it was a challenge.
Flashing forward to television today, again, working in daytime, the landscape of daytime TV has changed since you first got in daytime. There are a lot less soaps. Are you concerned about the daytime industry, one that you've worked in for so long?
Well, I believe for many years the daytime serial was the back support of the network, because a lot of their nighttime shows failed, but their soaps didn't fail, and they had a regular income from doing daytime shows. Now, I think they're looking at saving money, and they'd rather have a game show or a talk show where they don't have to pay writers and actors and have sets and costumes. It's expensive. I just think that there's been such a loyal audience. I don't know what that's going to do. They're trying to get rid of daytime. They are.
Well, I know that Days of Our Lives is still running strong, and things are going great there. And in the meantime, people can also see you in Nighttime. You'll be on Cold Case on Sunday, February 21st. On CBS, playing the role of Zelda, Queen of the Knives. We look forward to seeing that. I thank you very, very
here
much.
Here on the coast, it's on at 8 p.m. I don't know other places. Probably the same time.
Absolutely. I thank you very, very much, Peggy, for taking the time
You're
to be
welcome.
On the program with us.
All right. Bye-bye.
Peggy McKay, best known as Caroline Brady on Days of Our Lives. She will be on Cold Case on Sunday, February 21st on CBS, playing Zelda, Queen of the Knives. Check your local listings for the time in your area. I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and you're listening to the Stuff File program.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on this edition of The Stuff File, we still have more to talk about concerning the soaps. Plus, there is Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And as mentioned, as always, an idiot of the day. But first, more stuff right here, right now. Let's talk about slutty birds, shall we? A team of researchers led by a University of Connecticut professor writing recently in the ornithology journal The Auk declared the local salt marsh sparrow to be America's most promiscuous bird, in that 95% of the females hook up with more than one male during a mating season. The likelihood that any two chicks in the nest had the same father was only 23%, and in one-third of the nests, all chicks had different fathers. The researchers hypothesized that the frequent flooding of Connecticut's marshes destroys so many nests that non-choosy females have gained evolutionary advantage. By the way, a wren in Australia and a parrot in Madagascar are said to be comparably promiscuous. Oh, the things I hunt and search for in the names of science just to bring you folks. There you go. Okay, what's in a name? Well, until recently, His Excellency Miyango Akbar Zeb had lived an esteemed life as one of Pakistan's most senior diplomats. Mr. Zeb has served as the ambassador of Pakistan to the United States, India, and South Africa, the director general of Pakistan's foreign ministry, and most recently as Pakistan's high commissioner designate to Canada. But unfortunately, his impressive career came to a screeching halt when Pakistan decided to send Mr. Zeb into the Arab world. It seems nobody was aware of the Arabic translation of the senior diplomat's name. In Arabic, Akbar is translated to greatest or biggest, and unfortunately, Zeb is a slang word for male genitalia. Quite literally, his name translates to biggest dick. I can't make this up if I tried. Faced with an uncomfortable conundrum, it seems his Arab hosts felt this would not go over well, so they sent him home and refused to accredit Mr. Zeb as ambassador. Undeterred, Pakistan then tried to send Zeb to neighboring Bahrain instead, where he was rejected a second time on the same grounds. Then they tried sending him to Saudi Arabia, only to be rebuffed a third time. Three strikes. You're done, Zeb. Sorry. On to the state of Washington. Sheriff's deputies said a 17-year-old boy crashed his parents' car through the doors of the Shorecrest High School in Shoreline, then drove it down the hall. The car finally stopped 75 yards later when it hit a security office. Two school workers were still on the property and heard the crash. Police found the teen on school grounds about an hour and a half after the crash, late Friday night. He was taken into custody and then brought to Harborview Medical Center for a mental evaluation. Investigators say they do not believe drugs or alcohol played a role. The boy from Lake Forest Park is a student at the school. He was not injured. Meanwhile, in New York, an 11-year-old boy faces assault and weapon charges for trying to stab a classmate with a pencil over a math problem. Police in New Hartford, which is 80 miles west of Albany, said the boy was mad because a classmate kept trying to help him with his math classwork. When the would-be helper wouldn't back off, police said the boy lashed out with a sharp pencil and inflicted a scratch treated by the school nurse. Officer Shane Yoxall, working as a resource officer at the Valley Middle School, investigated. The 11-year-old, whose name wasn't released, was suspended from school and charged with felony attempted assault and misdemeanor criminal possession of a weapon. He must report to Oneida County probation officials on February 23rd. Boy, he'll have to find a different way of figuring out his math problems, won't he? Actually, math is not his biggest problem, I would think, at this point. But that's another story entirely. Speaking of people who just can't seem to get along, you may not know the name Jack Canfield, but I'll bet you've heard of his wildly popular self-help books, Chicken Soup for the Soul. We've had him on the radio program several years ago. Well, it seems not long before Canfield made it big in the self-help world, he wasn't exactly feeding his family's soul. 34 years ago, he left his pregnant wife and one-year-old son, Oren, and moved in with a masseuse. Not surprisingly, Oren grew up to become a 35-year-old junkie with major daddy issues and playing in a punk rock band called Child Abuse. Oren has also just written his own book called Free Fall, The Strange True Life, Growing Up Adventures of Oren Canfield. In the book, he details not just only his devastating descent into heroin addiction, but also the sustained anger he felt for the father who abandoned him and a mother who he feels was somewhat negligent. So what did he think of his father's chicken soup books? Oren says, "I refuse to read them. I never believed in that self-help crap." Good times. Yes, good times. I don't know. What makes you think he's not in the will? Just a guess. Anyway, moving right along, two partners in crime were sentenced to 4 years in jail between them by England's Manchester Crown Court in December. Ali Abdullah, age 28, and Mukhtar Nurin, age 22, had offered to take driver's license tests for people, both driving test and written test, but on contingency payment only of passing. Between them, they had 35 clients, took 43 tests, and failed 33 times, passing only 7 driving tests and 3 written. Although they did not charge for their failures, it is, of course, illegal to take a driver's test for another person. You think if someone was taking a driver's test for somebody, they'd actually know how to, what's the word I'm looking for? Drive. That's it. Yeah. And finally, in the stuff file, in this section of the program, police in Melbourne, Australia say they were astounded at the behavior of a suspect who had just stabbed his stepson in the neck. Apparently, the two had an argument which led to the stabbing. Police were called, and the suspect began walking right toward them with something in his hands, a piece of pie. When police told the guy to drop what he was holding in his hands and raise them above his head, he said, "It's only pie," and he refused. As other officers were attending to the stabbing victim, the suspect asked, "Did he die?" When he was told the victim was still alive, he seemed genuinely disappointed and said, "Waste of bleeping time, wasn't it?" As he was being handcuffed and put into the police car, the suspect asked the officers, "Can we pick up my pie, please?" He then tried to make a deal with the arresting officer, asking for the rest of the pie in exchange for his cooperation. He said, "My pie is sitting on the ground. I just paid for that." In the meantime, the victim is in serious but stable condition at a local hospital. Okay, this is a guy who definitely needs a psych evaluation. He's worried about the pie. Alrighty then. Okay, let's get to our next guest on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, as we continue to spend a little time talking about soaps. With us right now is Linda Marshall Smith from soapdom.com. She's here to talk about an event that is coming up and also a little about the state of the union in the world of soaps, plus a little news. Thanks for joining us, Linda.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here, Peter.
Right off the bat, let's talk a little bit about soapdom.com and what that's all about for those who aren't familiar with it.
Well, soapdom.com is a web destination, portal, and social network that's dedicated to the world of soap operas, a.k.a. soapdom. We've been online in one form or another since 1999, and we are right there in the middle of all the soap opera hustle and bustle. So we cover the daytime Emmys or on the red carpet. We cover special events at the shows themselves. And we work directly with the production companies, the networks, the talent, the publicists to, you know, deliver to fans the latest inside information on what's going on inside the world of soap opera. So come on and join us.
We're like the
first soap opera social network also. We're like a Facebook for soap operas.
Excellent. You've mentioned that you've been around since 1999. The world of soaps have changed a lot since 1999, and in a lot of cases, for the worse. There's a lot less soaps on than when you first started. Are you concerned about the future of the genre?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, when I did start this in 1999, there were 11 soaps on the air. Including, you know, Another World and Sunset Beach and Port Charles. And right around the time that I started was when Another World was canceled by NBC and then replaced by Passions, which has now since bit the dust also. You know, I think that the industry as a whole, you know, is still solid and still has fan base behind it. But I do think that they may need to change a little bit more with the times and keep up with some of the technology and some of the new applications for delivering, you know, soap opera content and not resist. For a long time, they were very resistant to some of the technology changes. They're starting to get on board now. But I, you know, certainly do want to see the genre continue, and in one form or another, I think we are seeing soap operas in different areas now, such as primetime TV, a show like Desperate Housewives or even Grey's Anatomy, or even some of the police shows. Back a couple of years ago, I think we started with like NYPD Blue, where they would say, well, previously on NYPD Blue. So there are these continuing storyline threads even on our primetime shows. Of course, shows like 90210 and Melrose Place and those types of shows, the ABC Family's Greek, for example. These are all soap operas, even though they're on once a week and then in a primetime format.
Two entities have had a series of casualties in the last little while. CBS has lost The Guiding Light and will lose As the World Turns. And the city of New York itself seems to be losing every soap but the one they have left, which is One Life to Live. And that seems to be, the word is, it might be on life support itself.
Yes, I think that that the network, you know, is behind One Life to Live somewhat. You know, they have moved them into bigger stages. The ones that all my children vacated when they moved out here. Hopefully, they'll have you know, more sets that they can work with on those bigger stages and that sort of thing. You know, they are bringing back some veteran and favorite characters to that show. Dan Gaudier and, you know, some other favorite characters are returning to One Life to Live. So, you know, ABC in particular, I think, is standing by their soaps because they own them. And they also own the SoapNet. Well, you know, it's part of the Disney family, but that's the SoapNet cable network. So they have two distribution outlets that need programming, and there are a fair amount of ABC soap fans, and that's one of the differences between the ABC soap lineup and all the other networks. You know, Procter & Gamble owned Guiding Light and Another World, but also As the World Turns. CBS doesn't own those. So if CBS cancels those shows, they're saving themselves hefty licensing fees and things that they don't have to pay, carrying casts of, you know, 30 to 40 people and contract negotiations for all of those people. I mean, it's much more cost effective for a network like CBS to put on a show like Let's Make a Deal, where they only have one host and you know, everything else is just audience guests that come on the show, and their only investment is prizes and prize money. So when the network owns the soap, such as ABC, it's a little bit of a different story. So I am not running to say that One Life to Live is going to, you know, hit the chopping block also. I think it's something that remains to be seen. And now that they are on the larger stages and they're bringing back some of this other talent and some of their other competition is no longer going to be on the air competing with them, As the World Turns is not going to be competing with them, what's going to happen with their ratings? So I think we have to wait and see on that one.
Now, you mentioned Passions a few moments ago, and for our listeners who are on the West Coast, there is an event that's coming up that involves someone who was from Passions that you're involved with, correct?
Yes, that is correct. I became involved with an event called the Soap Fan Mystery Theater, and it's very unique because it's taking soap opera talent along with some veteran primetime TV talent, and combining them to do these readings of little-known Agatha Christie works. And it's being held at the Writers Guild Theater in Beverly Hills, California. And there are two performances of different Agatha Christie works. The first one is called The Unexpected Guest, and that stars Stephanie Powers, who's the primetime TV icon from Heart to Heart, and a trio of popular stars from All My Children, including Jacob Young, who plays J.R. in All My Children, Adam Mayfield, who plays Scott Chandler, and Vincent Irizarry, who plays the deviously delectable Dr. David. So that's the first one, and that's going to be on Saturday, February 20th at 8 p.m., and Sunday, February 21st, two performances, one at 2 p.m. and one at 7. And the second reading is Agatha Christie's... hold on just one second.
I believe it's Spider's Web?
That's it. Thank you so much. The Spider's Web. That's correct. And that stars, again, Jacob Young, J.R. from All My Children, and Adam Mayfield and Vincent Irizarry. But Juliet Mills, who played the role of Tabitha, the very delightful witch on Passions, along with her husband in real life, Maxwell Caulfield, who did a stint for a while on All My Children and is probably best known for his roles in such things as Grease 2 and that sort of thing. They are both starring in that one, as well as some other surprise guests. And that performance is going to be March 13th and 14th at the Writers Guild Theater. And tickets are $49.50. There are a limited number of VIP tickets for $150. And the VIP tickets include meeting the stars and taking pictures and signing autographs. And you can get the tickets by going to soapfanmysterytheater.com and clicking on the ticket link.
So that's soapfanmysterytheater.com?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I'm surprised, being a soap fan yourself, that when you mentioned Matthew Caulfield, you mentioned Grease 2, but not the Colbys.
And the Colbys. Yes, he's probably best known for that primetime show, Colbys.
There
That's
you
correct.
Go.
A spinoff of Knott's Landing, was it?
No, a spinoff of Dynasty.
Dynasty?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. I mentioned to you off air that my favorite soap is one of the ones that's actually going off, and that is As the World Turns. I watched
know.
It since childhood. Before we let you go, I've got to ask you, what is your favorite soap? And if one of your favorite soaps has been canceled over the years, what was your favorite soap?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to answer that question. I have to be honest, because I love them all. And I know the talent from all of them, and I've worked with them, and I know the producers, and I know some of the writers, and I know all these people that work so hard every day to get these shows on the air. And what amazes me about the genre in general is that, you know, it's there every day, you know, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, with hardly ever a preemption and hardly ever a rerun. they work so hard to get this a new piece of entertainment on the air every day to entertain us. So it's hard for me to pick one because I just love them all. If I had to really pick one, it would probably be All My Children, because it's the one I used to watch when I was in college, and it reminds me of my coming home from class and gathering around with my college cronies and having a bowl of popcorn and watching our favorite soap. So it would have to be that one for me. But I do love them all. I mean, I truly do.
Excellent. Well, people can check out the website, which is soapdom.com. And again, I want to mention that other website you mentioned, www.soapfanmysterytheater.com, which is where people can get tickets for the two shows that are coming up, one coming up later this month and one coming up in March, to Agatha Christie readings that will take place involving several soap stars. I thank you very, very much, Linda, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, it's my pleasure. Have a good day, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Linda Marshall-Smith from soapdom.com. Again, you can check out the website at soapdom.com. She also mentioned the website for tickets for those shows, which is soapfanmysterytheater.com. And if you're on the West Coast and you want to check out those shows, I just want to let you know that you can win tickets from the soapdom.com website. Just go there and check that out. And of course, you can find the links to the sites I've already mentioned by going to my site, which is thestufffile.com. That's the Stuff File, S-T-U-P-H, thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is 0026, and you can find all the information. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters. And in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
I am still feeling great. I really
still?
Am. I'm telling you, I'm on top of the world.
Even though you're still unemployed, Steve?
Yes, that's right. The unemployment has gone on, stretched on for more than a day and a half, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm still unemployed, but it doesn't matter, Peter. I feel great.
Now, I understand a little birdie told me that you were up at the Capitol today, even though you're no longer employed. You were at the Capitol in Jefferson City?
Right, I hang around. I figure I can continue to make contacts and stuff like that, or I can sit at home on my butt and watch Oprah.
In your country, don't they call that lobbying?
I was lobbying, that's correct. I had some. There were two women I was talking to in one of the state senator's offices. One of them didn't like my tie.
Yes, Steve.
I sent you a picture of my tie.
I
with me wearing it. You thought it looked good.
I thought the tie was fine, Steve.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
But you could have just turned to her and said, well, I'm out of a job right now, so I can't exactly afford to change this tie.
Yeah, but me being the thrifty individual that I am, you know I have a whole closet full of ties, and I can wear a different tie every day for the next year.
You and me both, pal. You and me both.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, sir,
yes.
What do you have for us this week?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Sykeston, Missouri.
That'd be the show me state.
It's where I live, at least for now. Former Missouri House Speaker Rod Jetton, he was the former Speaker of the Missouri House of Representatives. It's a pretty high position. He faces a felony assault charge after visiting a woman in her home in Sykeston, apparently for a sexual liaison.
Mm.
Now, the woman later charged that Jetton punched her in the head and choked her into unconsciousness as the idea of foreplay. But Jetton said the assault, as it's being called, was consensual, in that she was to utter a prearranged safe word. See, it was a game. If things got too rough, and that he would have immediately stopped, Jetton told police that the woman never spoke the agreed-to phrase. I must tell you that until the time I left my previous employer, I paid homage to this phrase. Would you like to know what the phrase is, Peter?
Yes. What's the phrase?
Green balloons. That's the safe word.
Okay.
And before leaving the previous employer, I had two green balloons taped to the top of my desk just to show what kind of a whimsical individual I am.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But by the way, I've
not
noticed...
helping Rod Jettin, and it really didn't help me.
I've noticed, Steve, that you've used the term previous employer twice and also
yes.
said former twice. Do we have issues?
Yes.
Do we have issues, Steve?
No, not
okay.
at all.
Just
no,
checking, just
no,
checking.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Dateline, Powhatan County, Virginia.
That'd be the Old Dominion.
Yeah. You said that like somebody who was living on the wrong side of the tracks 160 years ago.
Do the name Ruby Begonia ring a bell?
Jimmy crashed Cornyn, I don't care. Anyway, I used to live there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you remember what Eli? You remember what Eli Whitney said?
Something about cotton, I'm sure. In the gin.
Yeah, he said, "Get your cotton picking hands off my gin." That's what he said.
That's what he said. Okay, that's very good. Peter, back in November, Powhatan County prosecutors dismissed charges against five corrections officers despite evidence that they were involved in inappropriately fondling a canine service dog. During training, officers are expected to bond with their dogs, and one of the men was seen touching the dog's penis with his hand. This according to a prosecutor. However, Virginia law requires that the state prove cruelty to the dog, and the prosecutor, after consulting with veterinarians, concluded that he couldn't win the case because, while it might have been inappropriate touching, apparently the dog didn't file a complaint.
Well, I guess it's only cruelty if they don't call after.
Yeah. Well, according now there was one police report I found from Powhatan County, Virginia. Apparently the dog was heard to utter green balloons. Dateline, Knoxville, Tennessee.
That'll be the Volunteer State.
Yeah, I never lived there.
Not yet.
Oh, you got that, my friend. You might have heard of the sport of cow tipping.
Yes.
And while it's unclear whether anyone actually tips cows, we do have a recorded case of a cow tipping a person and stepping on that person.
Ooh.
An ambulance was called to the University of Tennessee Agriculture campus to take care of a man who claimed he was working with cattle in a pen when one of the cattle knocked him down and stepped on his chest. By the way, cow tipping might not really work because cows, well, they weigh quite a bit. But if you try it, you can be sure the farmer is going to get mighty angry. Might come after you with a shotgun. So don't do it!
There you go. Yes.
Dateline, Memphis, Tennessee.
Still the Volunteer State.
Yeah, I still haven't lived there yet.
Not yet.
Yeah. Want a human barometer reading on just how bad the economy is?
Yes, please.
Well, in Memphis, police arrested a 47-year-old man for stealing coins out of a shopping mall's wishing well. He had scooped up about $33 worth of pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters by the time mall security caught up with him. The money was returned to the fountain, and our hard-up boy was taken to jail.
Hmm.
How about that, huh?
$33 worth of coins.
Yeah.
In the fountain. Sorry.
I was going to say $33 in coins in the fountain. Each one saying, I love... Okay. Yeah. Where do we go next? You know what? I like stories out of Memphis. We're going to stay there. Dateline, Memphis, Tennessee.
Still a Volunteer State. Are you sure you're not moving there?
maybe something's in the water, and I don't mean $33 and change. Communication skills were clearly lacking in a woman who police said tried to rob two Memphis credit unions. She fled empty-handed both times. A teller couldn't understand the would-be robber's mumbled commands in her first attempt. Police say the woman... Well, they say she threw a hold-up note at the teller, then ran from the building. A few hours later, at another credit union, a teller asked a woman several times if she needed help as the woman fumbled in her purse, then handed over a note. Well, she also pulled a gun, and when she did that, the teller left. The woman ran outside, tripped and fell, dropped her gun, then got into a car and left. They're still looking for her.
You know, communication skills can get a lot of people in trouble.
They sure can. That's happened to me.
Me too, as a matter of fact.
But, you know, unlike some people, Peter, I'm really not all that angry.
I've noticed that. You're rather calm.
Yeah, because if I got angry,
yes.
You know what I would do? I would take keyboard in hand,
yes.
And I would write a two-minute tirade.
Yes, you would.
And just because I thought you might suggest I could get angry, I wrote one for tonight.
Oh, okay.
Shall I do it for you?
Please, go ahead.
Okay. It is time for my 2-minute tirade, and this time I want to rant about people, certain people, those who wear backpacks as they walk in crowded places. You know, I recently served as a judge at a high school debate competition. While walking through this throng of students, some of them were wearing backpacks and would turn around at random and whack anyone who happened to be behind them. On more than one occasion, the anyone happened to be yours truly, me. Now, Peter, it's not that these young people were hitting me and, you know, other people on purpose. It's that when you're wearing a backpack, you're not aware that you're carrying an appendage that adds a considerable amount to what might be considered to be your personal space. And then you invade someone else's personal space. Whose? Mine. That's whose. Now, I fully understand that we can't really carry everything we need in our hands or our pockets, but what's with the backpacks? How about a nice briefcase or an attaché case? These are easily carried in one's hand, and they don't whack other people when the owner turns around. There comes a time, I think, when we have to say, enough is enough. Backpacks might work well for mountain climbing, excursions, or hikes in the woods, or even to a bike trip or something like that, but they're not designed for easy maneuverability in crowded hallways. The backpack does not belong in today's business environment and must be done away with, I say. For the sake of all those who believe in order and decency in office buildings and other indoor locations throughout America, and Canada too for that matter, I say ban the backpack now.
Oh my. Okay.
I'm curious. I can't help myself. The backpack just gets in the way.
Okay, sir. How can people get in contact with you again?
Oh, I have a new site. It is stevewalsh2010@gmail.com. And if you want to take a look at my website, it's a Posterous blog site. It is stevewalsh2010.posterous.com.
Excellent, sir. And before we let you go, can you say those three magic words?
You mean hit the thief!
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program. We have an idiot of the day in just a matter of moments, but before we get to that, one more Stuff File story for the road. Literally, a 12-year-old boy riding his skateboard was hit by a car in West Covina, California. He was hospitalized with leg and head injuries, which do not appear to be life-threatening. The driver of the pickup that hit him was not cited because, wait for it, investigation shows the boy skated into the street at an intersection against a red light, which he apparently didn't notice because he was texting on his cell phone at the time. Yes, texting, while stupid, is its own reward. And believe it or not, he's not the idiot of the day. This next guy is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A man who broke into as many as 9 cars was arrested after he chose the wrong target, an unmarked Florida police vehicle. Lake County Sheriff's deputies say the thief took a taser, a baton, 2 pairs of handcuffs, a magazine for a police pistol, and other items. Investigators discovered that when the thief found the taser, he accidentally discharged it, shocking himself. Then he locked the handcuffs on himself and had to call the Claremont Police Department to respond to release him. Shane Thomas Williams Allen, age 19, was arrested, I guess before he could accidentally beat himself with the baton. He tasers himself. He gets the handcuffs locked on himself. He has to call the police to get him free so they can then arrest him. Only one reason why someone would go to all this trouble. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0026. Hope you've enjoyed it. You can go to the website at thestufffile.com. That's STUPH, thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number of this program, which again, as I said, is 0026. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show. That would be 0027. The show is on air, online, or available as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.